Welcome to Books, Stories, People with me, Nancy Richards. Well, I think it would be true to say that writers all over the world need encouragement. Certainly beginner writers do, and in South Africa, no less. For this reason, the main focus of the Jakes Herwel Foundation is to promote new voices in local literature by giving upcoming South African writers support. So who was Jakes Herwel? Well, there you go. It would be very hard to sum up this late, hugely respected activist, academic, linguist in just one word or even three. But his literary legacy lives on primarily in his hometown of Somerset East, where each and every year his foundation offer a retreat for aspiring writers. Well, one of the mentors there this year is Rachel Krief. She's a published writer, she's a journalist, she's a playwright, but she also facilitates the School of Creative Writing at the Breitenbach Cultural Centre in Wellington. So there's a lot of hats she's wearing. And interestingly, she says, rather amazingly, I thought, that it's almost more exciting to see the success of her students' work than her own. So, Rachel, how humble of you to be saying that. But therein hangs a lot of things. There hangs your humility, you know, what it is about teaching students that grows oneself. But before we even get into that, let's start with Jakes Herwel. I mean, I'm saying that he was an academic, he was an activist, but he was a very big figure in the literary world. Can you paint a portrait for us?
I think it will be very close to the truth to say that Jakes was a Renaissance man. And people in Cape Town know the Jakes Herwel Drive, but that's just one little bit. He died relatively young, which is a pity and is sad, because he was one of the most balanced, humble, intelligent, and emotionally intelligent intellectuals and academics I think we've ever had in this country.
Did you know him, Rachel?
I didn't know him. Well, I knew of him and I listened to his speeches, et cetera, no. But I heard him often. He also had a wonderful sense of humor. And he was born in the Eastern Cape and was one of 10 children. His parents were farm workers, so he completely understood where most South Africans come from and how hard it is to have very little and to become a star. And that's what he did. Mm. He became a star.
So the focus of his foundation then is very much to do with literacy. Just describe a little bit about what they do.
They have many projects and programs, all beginning and revolving around books, writing and books, education, learning, but in a fun, creative, emotionally compassionate way. There's the YOR, exclamation mark, YOR. Okay. Project at Grassy Park High School. That's where Jakes taught before he became a lecturer at UWC. And at this Paulette House in Somerset East, which was not the house where he was born. It was a house he bought and restored in his later years as a little Plattelandse escape. Mm. By the way, it was Lord Charles Somerset built that house for his second wife, and she was called Paulette. Although the spelling of this Paulette and her Paulette is different, I don't know why. Lost in translation.
What a tangled history that
is. Anyway, to get it back to Jakes. Mm. And in Somerset East, for instance, they have a huge project distributing books and school bags, book cases, rucksacks for young learners. They have something running at Wellington. I think it's also part of the YOR. And then they have the mentorship programs at the Somerset East House. They also have an international arm, which is not up and running at the moment, with Belgium. They encourage the writing of lyrics, poetry, everything. And they'd get a plays, playwright. Abdurrahman, for instance, I know was there, and he had a couple of young playwrights, that well-known actor. They would do that, and then you'd go there for a couple of weeks. And the wonderful thing is that all costs are paid for the young, aspiring writers.
Quite literally.
Yo.
So
yes.
There are many, many avenues.
Yes, I don't think – I don't work for them on a full-time basis at all. They've contracted me for this, so I'm sure I've missed half of it.
They've contracted you not for no reason, because one of the things you mentioned is mentorship, and I think on an annual basis they have a mentorship program that runs at Paulette House – each time with a different theme. And I think this year you are going to be one of the mentors. What is the theme and what is your role?
The theme is short writing. Sounds a bit weird. It's not only short stories. I started off as a short story writer in Afrikaans, and I still like doing that, and it's very hard to write a good short story. I think you need more time than you need for a novel, be that as it may. So it's going to be short prose. In other words, I'm going to help mentor, guide the young aspiring writers to also write a column for the media, for instance. In the olden days, we'd call it an essay. Not poetry, although I will make them read and translate a lot of poetry. It's a wonderful vehicle to teach the importance of finding the 100% specific right word. Poetry, it's amazing. And I'm not going to be involved, we're not talking about novels, longer narratives, or plays at this stage. So anything short, yeah.
So anything and anybody, I'm thinking, because these are not necessarily aspiring writers or novelists. These are guys and girls, I'm assuming, who just want to write, and you're giving them the encouragement to do that, but to then choose whatever form they want. So who are these people?
They are people who are, you know, the people who write at home and who show it to their mothers and their partners and their best friends, and everybody says it's wonderful, which is important because that's what your loved one should say. But they do not have the outside, the critical eye yet, and they are unpublished. That's quite important.
Unpublished and unpolished.
Well, maybe not. Yes, it's always maybe. Very surprising what you get. Maybe they're not unpolished. I think it's a wonderful opportunity because the Jakes Haverhill Trust has been very bright in inviting only 5 aspiring writers, which is a very small group, and 3 weeks is a long time. That's intensive. So intense, sorry.
Yes, very intense. So there'll be quite a lot of peer review. I was going to say peer pressure. There'll probably be that too. But principally, it'll be you who's driving this. And as I say, that you were not chosen for no reason, because this is something that you do at the Breytenbach Cultural Centre in Wellington. How did you become a mentor, and what does it really mean?
I became a mentor by default, like everything in life. My generation, well, we didn't have writing schools, although I did a master's in creative writing at UCT later in my life, which taught me absolutely nothing. Be that as it may, I've been doing this at Wellington, and I made it up the curriculum, as it were, as I went along. You first have to establish the needs of people, then look at their abilities, and you must then decide about the outcome. What would I like to see at the end, and what would they like to see? So I create a very creative, very safe environment, that's very important, where they also, I will criticize their work to begin with. And as they get to know each other and to trust each other and myself, they will gradually begin to, you know, criticize each other's, or is it one another's, I can never remember, work. But by that time, the group usually becomes, it's very interesting, I've been doing it for 6-7 years, they usually become friends. Yeah, it's an intimate space. You work with emotional things.
On the subject of finding exactly the right word, I'm thinking of the distinction between being a mentor and being a teacher, and criticism and critique. Because as a mentor, you're not teaching anybody, you're doing something different. Can you just establish what the difference is then?
Yes, I think the role of a mentor is a larger, more encompassing role. In other words, you also have to psychologically or emotionally support the people without them knowing about it. In other words, when they arrive, I quickly try and learn who they are, what is the background, what are the fears, what are the anxieties, and very important to establish their strong points in writing. Whenever you see something, a little spark of something, you encourage that immediately before you start telling them these are horrible cliches and et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, that must be
so
very
it
difficult.
Is that's a psychological take on it. And I guide them towards good writers, to other writers all over the world. I mean, the English literature is there accessible to South Africans, which is absolutely fantastic. I do that, although I teach mostly in Afrikaans. And yeah, you can't teach someone to create art, you can guide them by tuning their ear, and you can't tune an eye, that's a completely wrong metaphor, but teaching them how to be absolutely aware of everything that goes on around them constantly.
So as a mentor then, you've got to be a little bit of a psychologist or a social worker perhaps, let's be a little bit gentler here. But the difference between criticizing somebody's work and critiquing it, if you've got a young person or even an older person who's written something that they really rather chuffed with and their mother has told them yes. how good it is, or their partner has, and you come along and say, you know, this is really full of cliches, it must be a very delicate balance to shred somebody's work, but at the same yes. time, you know, pick out the good bits.
To gently shred it. You know, Nancy, that's just because I am who I am. I use humor, and that really, really helps. It softens the edges. And I think I'm not young anymore, so I've seen a lot of people. I can judge someone's character. Some people you can critique earlier than other people. And always, I motivate. And this is what I teach my students too when they work with one another's work. You can't just say, oh, I like it, it's cool, it's nice, all those vague, horrible things, words. You have to motivate. If you say, this doesn't work for me, I don't like the title, or the title doesn't work, you must explain to the group why the title doesn't work for you. Or if it's a great title, you must say to the group, I think it's a great title because of these various reasons.
As a writer yourself, I can only imagine it must be very difficult to think, say somebody's got a particular story that they're trying to tell, how you would tell it and how they would tell it. It must be very difficult for you to hold back your own feeling, and a bit like a psychologist has to imagine what this person is feeling rather than how they would be feeling about it. How do you ensure that it remains theirs and not the way you would do it?
It's a matter of self-discipline too. I keep myself, my own writing, my own creative voice out of it as much as I can. I never, for instance, I have many literary works to use my own. I never use my own work at all for this very reason. My voice must not be visible, and I'm very aware of that. This is why I try and establish the young writer's voice and aura and footprint, as it were, as soon as possible. Yes.
You mentioned also that, you know, there's this great literary body of work out there. Is it, and one hears this all the time, that if you want to be a good writer, you have to read, read, read and read. What do you encourage them to read? Things that are a little bit like the sort of work they're doing, or things that are very different?
To begin with, they must read everything. All the words on the washing powder box. All the words on the tissue box. Pamphlets, documents, media, poetry, a lot of poetry, and then, of course, fiction, and also non-fiction. So it's very important for a writer. If you do not read, I'm not entirely sure if you read nothing how you will go about it, but it has been done, apparently. I can't remember who it was, but someone told me about it. So, yeah. One must read, because it's like words are your tools. You know, it's like a workman going into a space and having to fit a kitchen or something. You have a toolbox. And words, 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 expressions, idioms, tools.
In the mentoring journey, what are the stumbling blocks that you come across often, and what are the breakthroughs?
Well, can I talk about the breakthroughs first? Because that's really lovely when they see their progress and they absolutely cannot believe that they have created this. And I don't rewrite their stories for them, ever, not at all. I make suggestions. And that is marvelous, you know, the bright eyes. Sometimes it's quite emotional, you know, people even become tearful. And the greatest is to see your writers publish. And in the past 18 months I had a number of my students published very, very good works, prominent works. The one is up for quite a big Afrikaans Literary Prize this month. That is, of course, absolutely stunning. I had a very long journey with someone who phoned me many, many years ago when I was the book editor of the Rapport, the Sunday, Afrikaans Sunday newspaper, and he was in prison at the time. He was very young. And yeah, his book came out now and it is astounding. It's going to change the, well, it will leave more than ripples in the Afrikaans literary world. Definitely, definitely. And I can also see him writing work for the theatre. Okay, those are the wonderful things.
The stumbling blocks?
Yeah. If there's really very little talent, that is hard. Well, it's a myth probably that one has to, that I try to destroy with a bulldozer, but in a very indirect, very gentle, very subtle, very humorous, hopefully, way, is that writing is about a feeling. You know, you wait for this wonderful feeling you feel somewhere between your heart and your stomach, also called inspiration, they would say, and you sit down and you scribble a few things and that's it, and then you can begin your writing career. Writing is all about rewriting. If you cannot rewrite well and continuously over and over and over again, yeah, you must just go and find something else to do, which is much, which would be easier than writing.
A very hard lesson when you spent a long time working on something.
Yes, and you must understand it's a very lonely work, occupation, profession, because you'll sit on your own for not hours and days, but for weeks or months on end, depending on what you are writing. If you're writing a novel, you know, if it's a longer piece of work, you will spend even more time and longer stretches, like the long distance runner. Shorter pieces are closer to sprints, I could say, although I said in the beginning to write a good short story is very, very challenging. Other challenges, yeah, so that myth of inspiration, and to also make them understand it's perfect if their boyfriend or girlfriend or lover says, this is absolutely amazing, you're going to win the Nobel Prize without any doubt, to illustrate to them that it's important to have that encouraging person in your life, but that you have to be quite tough, because to get a book out there, to have a book published by a good leading publishing house, is incredibly, incredibly hard.
So it's pretty important to have a thick skin.
Absolutely.
Because it's not going to happen very quickly. You mentioned inspiration there, and you say that it's a lonely activity. However, one hopes that one will be visited by the muse, which, you know, or the inspiration. Is that in itself a myth? Because, you know, sometimes people say that you've just got to keep writing until it arrives. It's not going to be there waiting for you.
Yeah, it's definitely not waiting for you. It's not going to arrive and land gently on your shoulder like a little angel. In my case, and I read what other established writers have to say about writing, creative writing, and this is true for most people. The muse and the inspiration, these cliched words, come into play only when you are thoroughly involved with your own work. In other words, when you see something beginning to happen, that's it.
The objective of mentoring somebody is not necessarily so that they can become a best-selling novelist, but just so that they can write well. How important is the ability to write well in a person's life generally?
It can be very helpful in healing. In other words, writing as therapy, definitely. I have seen that. I was also part of a little program using writing as therapy once. Many people want to write down the history of their families, and it's simply they want to write well for their children and grandchildren. And you still have to write well. Your children and grandchildren or nieces or nephews or whoever, they're not going to read what you've written if the very first sentence and paragraph is utterly boring and you want to fall asleep and you can't get through it. So you still have to write well. You have to sell your writing, as it were. You have to, yeah.
And sell yourself through your writing, even writing your own CV.
Yes, yes. You must, I can't think of the English word now. In Afrikaans, it is verlei. You have to tempt your reader. It's not, still not the right word, sorry. But the title must be so interesting or magical or strong that someone will look at it and say, wow, this is nice, I want to read this. And then the first line has to do exactly the same. And so you have to entice them into your story without them actually knowing about it. And then they come to a point where they can't put it down. I don't know how I got to this very long-winded answer. What did you ask?
It was a complicated question. Who mentored you?
All the books, all the writers I read from before I went to school. And I was read to my parents, both my parents read to me. I didn't really, this is, sorry, I'm fumbling a bit. Raymond Carver, the American short story writer, the guy from the previous century who really revitalized the short story, people call him America's Chekhov. I read all his work. He was also a creative writing teacher, and he had a mentor again. It's very interesting. John Gardner, and John Gardner was mentored by Faulkner, I think, if I remember. Be that as it may, so I started reading what Carver had to say about writing. And he is, like Jacques Gerwel, an incredibly bright man, but someone with honesty and integrity and no fuss and no flies and no ego. He always, you know, he would teach things like find the simplest word. And if you go and read Raymond Carver, I mean, a couple of his works have become films and plays. Even his poetry is remarkable. I learned a lot through him. I had my first editor was very good and encouraging. She wrote me three little letters. My babies were small at the time. Short little letters, handwritten, which came through the post. And I kept that. And she encouraged me to continue, but also not to panic. I was writing short stories at the time. And she said to me that, you know, don't panic. Life brings the stories. It's okay. Even if you feel there's nothing to write about now, look after your babies first. That's the most important, your children, your home. So I had her, and then my first editor at Tafelberg Uitgevers, the late Charles Fryer. I still hear his voice. He worked on my first book and my second, I can't remember. And when I write, I hear his voice. But I also, from when I was very small, loved music and dance. And it sounds strange, but I learned a lot through those arts. When I was 5 years old, I started doing ballet. My mother took me off to a wonderful building called Broadway. And I watched Eduard Greiling, the ballet dancer, the well-known dancer and teacher, watched him. He was 15 years old. I was 5 years old. And he taught me, without saying a word, we became friends much later in life, about the dedication and the passion, of being creative. And I can pull that through to other arts too, yes. So it's not only from writing. And good film is a very, very good teacher.
It's a multi-tentacled creature, this writing business. Just lastly, you mentioned honesty and integrity, and I'm sure that those are absolute key words for any writer to be using, honesty and integrity. But, you know, here in South Africa, there are a lot of people with stories to tell who are, for whatever reason, forced to write in a language that is not their mother tongue. I mean, you yourself have been, as you say, stumbling with Afrikaans English. How difficult is it to write in a language that is not your own? Is it better to write in your mother tongue and then translate it? What's your feeling on that?
If you can write in your mother tongue, definitely. Enough has been researched and written and said about that, without a doubt. I find it incredibly hard to directly write in English. I did it once, and I was incredibly lucky. The story did very well and was a finalist for the Baby Booker in England. But it is, I can't, it's not the language of my dreams and my heart and my body, as it were. Yeah, and it's a pity that our publishing world in South Africa is good, but so small, and that many people do not get the opportunities. So some people, I would encourage people to write in their mother tongue and then either translate it themselves or take that work to a publisher and see what happens. The most interesting thing happening at the moment in Afrikaans literature is the fact that Kaapse Afrikaans, or Kaaps in short, is beginning to move and bringing forth wonderful, exciting voices in Kaaps. It's a form of Afrikaans which, to keep it short, people speak on the Cape Flats, but then you get a derivative of that in the Northern Cape, for instance, or in the middle of the Karoo. And that is incredibly exciting because it opens worlds and windows and doors to other cultures and other ways of living in South Africa. And the language is becoming incredibly, I mean, it's enlarging and becoming very, very supple, which is really great.
Maybe that may be too big a question, but what about language switching? I'm talking about the sort of language that's spoken on the Cape Flats. I'm thinking about the sort of language that's spoken in the townships, where there's very often a mix, which is what makes it so beautiful.
It is fantastic. How are you? We encourage that. I encourage that in writing completely, completely. There's nothing, you know, you must not have put on a certain tuacha, what is the word I'm looking for, of speaking formal or academic or university or educated Afrikaans before you can write. In fact, you must leave that at home.
Well, let's have one last pearl of wisdom. If you had one bit of advice or a couple of pieces of advice for somebody who's an aspiring writer, what would they be?
Humor, definitely. And to continue between, because it's always there on either side of you, hope on the one hand and despair on the other one, and to just sit on your little kayak and slalom through those two feelings and continue, but to not stop paddling, just stay on the river of writing and rewriting, the river of rewriting.
Very sound advice. Rachel Grif, thank you very much. And if anybody, I think that as we speak, I think that the Jakes Gerwel Foundation program is probably full, or certainly very nearly. So, but if anybody would like to find out a little bit more about it, they can check the website, which is www.jgf.org.za, jgf.org.za. Rachel, happy writing. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Nancy.